Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Where am I?
In my apartment. What's left of it. I'm Alicia Travers.
Jonathan Archer.
Pleased to meet you. What's the last thing you remember?
I was in a truck with a couple of German soldiers. There was an explosion. Someone started shooting at us. I got away.
You sure did. And your SS friends? They're dead, which is how I like them. You're my first bona fide POW. I usually fix up guys in the resistance. Easy, 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 sailor. You don't want to start bleeding again.
Sailor?
Yeah, that patch on your shirt says Enterprise. You must have made it off before it sank. How'd you wind up all the way over here?
I've been asking myself the same question.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Yes, let's do it. Let's do this podcast.
Evidence!
Okay. All right. Yes, let's get right into it this week, because this week, as it happens, this particular week, I don't know which number week this is in the year, because we don't generally keep track of things that way, do we? We don't generally do that.
Which way?
What?
You know where, like, people are like, this is the 30th week of the month
or
the year?
Who does that?
I guess not a lot of people, but there's no particular reason not to. But I was just pointing out to the audience that we do not do that.
No. We keep track of the number of... This is which episode of the podcast?
They 204. They too probably do not do that. The audience.
We don't need to do that because we divide them up, the weeks up into months.
It's like, what are you, like, out in space keeping track of shit?
Like, it's more efficient to say it's the third 15th day of the 12th month rather than like it's the 51st week of whatever.
Ah, but is it efficient to have the months have a bunch of ridiculous numbers of numbers?
Different,
you know?
Numbers of, oh, have different.
Some of them have this many numbers,
no,
and some of them have another amount of numbers.
No, I wouldn't.
And then there's that one month.
No.
I don't want to say it out loud, but I think we know what we're talking about.
It's a little freaky.
But when you can divide things up into P parts, when you divide things up into P parts.
What kind of P parts?
So if you have 200 things, it's better to divide them up into like groups.
Yeah,
so
I agree. Yes, all of that is
except if you're like a timestamp on a computer, and then
if
it doesn't,
you are a timestamp,
then you are a millisecond.
Okay, is that a joke or is there's no joke in there? Is
there's
there?
No joke in there?
No, but it had the cadence of a joke.
I guess if you were a millisecond or a timestamp or a whatever.
Anyway, all
if you
of
were
that...
Jesse, if you were a timestamp, you'd be a millisecond.
Okay, yeah, see what I'm saying? It sounds like it's supposed to be a joke that I'm just not clever enough to get.
It wouldn't be.
Do you think it's a joke? Do you think it's a joke that you're just not clever enough to get, even though you're the one who made it?
Yes.
All right.
I think, though, that wasn't a joke because...
I think a lot of things could
What I
like
said
that.
Wasn't a joke because timestamps are in milliseconds. So if I wanted to be a joke, I'd be like, Jesse, if you were a timestamp, you'd be in centoseconds or whatever.
Centoseconds.
Centoseconds.
See, that's, to me, that wasn't funny at all.
Yeah. Well, you just don't get it. There. You're not smart enough to get it is
okay.
The problem.
Again, all of that is a very long distance way of getting around to the topic, which is that this week, we are hosting for you, the audience, the 204th episode of this podcast, which is called the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Those are P-51s.
Yes, and as hinted at by Dan,
nice
Dan has just laid down a clip for us from this episode. It's actually two episodes because this is a two-parter.
But it could arguably be a three-parter, but it's not because this part of Enterprise was very serial. But like I watched actually the previous episode, and this does stand on its own as a two-parter.
Okay, all right. So we have to say what the title is, even though.
Do we?
Even though. I know, the people have clicked on the button. They will know what the title is. They know that we are discussing Star Trek, Enterprise, Stormfront, parts one and two. Jesse's got the stylophone going this week. Stormfront, it's the two-part opener to the fourth season, the fourth and last, as it turns out, season of Star Trek Enterprise, though they did not know that at the time of producing this episode.
What a bunch of fools.
They didn't know that it was going to be a two-parter.
No, they didn't know it was going to be the last season of Enterprise. Oh. Okay. I apologize if I did not convey that.
Wow, this episode's really long.
Yeah. I guess we'll just make it a two-part.
I guess they'll just have an extra long episode one week.
It'll be the most,
they cut it in
most
half.
Hilarious form of production. And you're like, maybe that's why you all got canceled. Mm-hmm. You're just actually out there just filming extra episodes.
But the last episode prior to this did end on a cliffhanger, yes, which is why it may seem like a three-parter. But as said before, that time of Enterprise was very serial in general. Because I watched that last episode and I was like, well, it would have helped to watch the one before that. So now I'm actually was thinking, I kind of want to rewatch. I haven't done this in a while where I rewatched all of a Star Trek series, but I'm kind of wanting to rewatch Enterprise.
Enterprise is totally worth a rewatch. You can also just watch, if you want, you know, season three. It's kind of like a big long arc. It's not quite as serialized as, say, Discovery or Picard, right? But it's got that serialized action going on.
Would you say it was more or less serialized than DS9 near the
end? More, I'd say a little bit more, although it's more like later Deep Space Nine, like season 7 Deep Space Nine, perhaps. Because the stories did kind of lead one into the other, but they often had some stories that were a bit more discreet, even if they tangentially touched upon the greater, quote-unquote, Zindi arc. But Zero Hour, you're right. So Zero Hour is ending the Zindi arc of season 3, and then at the very end, and this is just for background if folks didn't happen to see that episode, that ends with a cliffhanger in which Captain Archer is found in a Nazi prison camp.
Yeah.
And we don't have any other information other than that.
Betty Grable.
Betty Grable.
Rita Hayworth. Veronica Lake. Betty Grable. Veronica Lake. Rita Hayworth. Veronica Lake. Betty Grable.
What an asshole.
So that season was overseen by Brandon Braga and Rick Berman. And the fourth season, those two gentlemen, or those people, handed control over to Manny Coto. And I think he recently passed away. Yes, much too young age. But Manny Coto is given a lot of credit. He worked as a writer on the show.
Was that
show
disrespectful
to
of me to play that Voss clip right after you said
no,
he died?
I think it was 100% appropriate. He would have appreciated that, no doubt. I'm just going to go ahead and is it weird? Is it inappropriate for me to declare that you would have appreciated
nah.
that? Well, okay. But Manny Coto wrote a lot of the best scripts for Enterprise. So he got elevated to showrunner, basically, in the fourth season. And he's responsible for the idea of doing these like series of mini arcs. But one thing that happened was, I think he was handed this Nazi storyline and he decided, okay, I'm gonna close this down real quick, right? We're not gonna do like a whole season of this.
Okay, let's do it.
and he also was like, I'll shift where the story was intended to go, tied into the whole temporal Cold War, because he wanted to close down that fucking temporal Cold War storyline, because the temporal Cold War storyline is some crazy ass fucked up shit on Enterprise. It's simultaneously interesting and ridiculous, because anytime you're trying to deal with like a multi-time spanning war, it's complicated. It was a sort of sophistication that I don't think that era of Paramount UPN produced Star Trek was going to accommodate.
It was confusing, right? Because they had to like kill Vosk in that time period to prevent some action he did in the past that was in the future, but then it was more in the past. They didn't really they sort of briefly touched on it, but they didn't really go into it.
Yeah.
But I will say that what I liked about this time plot of resolving it by saying like, okay, if you do this one event, everything's gonna go back to normal. Normally that's problematic, because I think it's problematic because of the whole butterfly effect, whatever. It's like, okay, maybe you prevented the big catastrophe from happening, but along the way you fucked with a bunch of people's lives. So if you're gonna prescribe to the butterfly effect, that'd be problematic. But this
one, now nobody has thumbs.
Yeah, exactly. Precisely. Everyone lost their thumbs. They developed them and then they lost them. But this one actually makes sense in that, okay, it can restore back to the perfect timeline, because they, they're doing all these shenanigans in the past, fucking with people's lives, but they prevented the thing that prevented the guy from doing the thing in the future and then in the past. And so it's like, so it never happened.
Here's the thing.
I know it doesn't make sense, but
yeah, I was gonna say, it does not make sense, but you want it to make sense because it's a fun story.
I'm just saying the idea of restoring the timeline to perfection by preventing other time travelings from happening, like, makes a little more sense to me. Not makes more sense. It's less like aggravating to me than the whole, like, oh, we prevented this bridge from falling, but now, like, a whole city knows that we're rumping around like weirdos.
Because I was like, you watch like two episodes and it's like, okay, everybody's like back together. So how are they going to fix all this stuff? And like, you're still there's a bunch of stuff to fix and the timeline is all screwed up. Like, these aliens have been wreaking havoc.
Yeah, and
all they have to do is kill this one guy off, and then that does it.
When they showed the time fixing montage, there were apparently dinosaurs. They fixed the dinosaurs, yeah. So they went back in time.
It was frequent when we were hanging out with Daniels, that guy Daniels, that the temporal guy, Cold War
trouble,
agent.
Man. That guy
and,
is
and
trouble.
He's always got. He's always standing around some floating business, and it's like time doing. It never made.
I
any
wonder
sense.
Where they got all those like those video montages. If those were just clips, like
this old Paramount film.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they just threw in there.
Some stock ass
from Chakotea, from Chakotea.net, where I look at the scripts.
That's your favorite website,
That's my favorite script site when they have them, which they have most of them, just not the new ones. During that time series montage, in the script notes, it says, and with an image of Archer running down the gantry before the Zindi weapon exploded, the bridge shimmers
the
back into view.
Previous episode, Zero Hour.
So that was interesting. Like that, I at that point, I'd kind of zoned out all this time stuff going by, and like I totally missed it. It's like, oh yeah, there's Archer as part of the timeline that they fix. Is Archer running through?
He's got to run through that. Although I guess he didn't get blown up.
No, he didn't get blown up.
So he did get sent back into time. But he still got his clothes on. So his clothes didn't disappear, even though those events disappeared.
Oh, right. They fixed the timeline where he's running through the bridge, which meant he never went back in time in the first place.
So he should have been blown up.
Mm. He should have been blown up.
Instead of wearing his 1940s clothes on the bridge, his sort of sexy
with his
poor people clothes.
And I like when Silic was wearing his like time.
He's wearing some kind of like schmo clothes.
Yeah, some schmo clothes.
General schmo clothes. Right.
There's a lot in this episode. It is a two-parter, but it's, I mean, a fairly straightforward story. But the two main observations I wanted to make were, first, that one cool thing about tonight's podcast is that Dan, you and I will be able to gauge Jesse's engagement directly by how much he's playing with the stylophone.
Yeah. That's true. That's a good point.
Audience,
I never thought
about
that.
You can play along at home, too.
You guys start talking about stuff I don't understand. And I just start going like...
It's fact. It's fact.
The other observation...
It's no longer a rumor. It's fact.
Fact. It's fact. No longer a rumor. It's fact.
It almost sounds like a made-up word. Fact.
Fact.
I'm fucked. Fact.
Okay. So this relates back to that business where I was saying with Manny Coto taking over and kind of wanting to shut down the temporal Cold War timeline. I also think another thing at play was like, yes, this is the fourth season. They did get renewed. They weren't 100% sure if they were going to get renewed for a fourth season. They did.
I had a feeling.
But when they were producing this season, they also weren't sure if they were going to get renewed for a fifth season. And they were sort of desperate for ratings. And as we all know, in aftermath, in the after fact, in the post haste business, they did not get renewed for a fifth season, right?
Son of a bitch.
So I think one thing you see right here at the beginning is Manny Coto.
Son of a bitch.
Manny Coto, who is a big fan of Star Trek.
Manny Coto.
I think he came in here and he's like,
you
know what?
That's all right.
Like I said, we can, you know.
Manny Coto.
Manny Coto.
It's like some sort of Italian cream cheese.
Nice.
So what we've got is Manny Coto comes in, takes over the show, and I think he was basically like, you know what? We need ratings. So what are we going to do? We're going to make a Star Trek episode that's got everything. It's got Nazis. It's got gangsters. It's got time travel.
Yeah.
It's got prison breaks. It's got a temporally appropriate strong female interlocutor. It's got a
Loch Ness monster.
A shirtless captain gets treated by said female interlocutor. So this is everything. This is City on the Edge
Spaceships.
Of Forever. This is the one with the, you know, there's multiple ones with the Nazis. The Voyager did the Nazis.
And TOS. Piece of the action.
And then the gangsters and a piece of the action. Except this one's flipped. Instead of they're fighting with the gangsters, they're friends with the gangsters. Like, oh, yeah. My gosh. They're just like,
It's 1944.
We'll do everything. We're just going to toss everything into the bucket.
There's a Deep Space Nine where they go back to the 40s, right?
Yes, but that is...
It's after World War II.
That is...
Martian.
That is a very different story.
Yeah, right.
Far beyond the stars. It's one of the best episodes of Star Trek ever. We'll probably not discuss it because I don't think we are the right people to be... providing a thorough analysis of that episode, but it's a great one.
Okay, yeah. Let's do it!
Exactly. And it was directed by Avery Brooks, that episode.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But that episode does share a similarity to this episode, which you already referenced, Jesse, I believe, when you mentioned that John Fleck, who plays Silic, he does that thing where he's like in disguise, and so he just looks like the actor.
Yeah.
And Far Beyond the Stars does that too, where they're all the actors get to, you know, Quark and Worf and everybody.
Quark!
I was thinking of called Little Green Men.
Little Green Men is a different one.
Yeah, that's what I was. They go back to the 40's on that one too.
Oh, yeah. Little Green Men is an. That's a Roswell.
Send that to the future.
Yeah, it's a Roswell story.
But that doesn't have Nazis, That does have a prison break, though. And I mentioned prison break is one of the main. The main thing.
Betty Grable.
When they go back in time, when Alicia's all like saying, hey, when you go back to the future, make sure things are good for me and stuff.
Dun, dun, dun,
when you go, yeah.
Dun, 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 dun.
Back to the Future, the movie. Yeah, that's what you just did. That's good. Dun, 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 dun,
yeah, I already did that part.
Dun, 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 dun,
yeah, I did that part.
You did that part?
I did that part.
Oh, well, how about this part?
What, you're going to play The Power of Love now?
Power of Love.
Huey Lewis in the News? I'm afraid you're just too darn loud.
Oh, no. What show is that?
Can I borrow a feeling?
Can I borrow a feeling, right?
Yes. Yes.
Milhouse
okay.
is dead.
Billy Holiday. All right.
I had a feeling.
15 minutes into this program, we've gone completely off the rails.
What was that guy's name? Kurt
Vonnegut?
No, the Milhouse is
dead. Van Houten.
Chris Van Houten. Kurt Van Houten.
Kurt Van Houten.
Kurt Van Houten.
Can I borrow a feeling? Borrow a feeling. Borrow a feeling.
Okay.
Borrow a feeling.
Okay. All right. Stop.
I sleep in a race car.
I sleep in a bed with my wife. Sorry.
it's got the old Simpsons.
The old Simpsons. What I was saying is when Alicia was all saying like, hey, when you go back and fix the past and make things great again. So she was establishing she recognized that her timeline is going to be all different. Wasn't she at all scared that, oh no, my existence will cease to exist?
But that's the thing. Her existence, it just goes back to how it was before.
She was saying she wanted her husband home. So she didn't care that... Wow. So basically,
you gotta beat the Japanese.
But she understood. My understanding was that she understood that if Archer was successful, all of the stuff from the Nazi invasion would be erased,
right?
And so her husband wouldn't be sent away necessarily, or maybe he would be because it would still be the war. So
he'd
you
still
know
be
what?
In the Pacific.
Maybe it wouldn't be that different.
But he's fighting the Japanese.
But would her timeline be changed?
Yes.
Are you sure it's not some alternate timeline? Because the reason I asked this is because Vosk was all trying to make a deal with Archer, being like, hey, Archer, if you go back, if you send us back, we'll fuck up our timeline, but we'll send you back to
he's
your
like,
good
I'll fix
timeline.
It, I know.
So,
because
like, how does
it
that compare?
Because it doesn't make any fucking sense. Because they paste over all of this stuff. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, they did. Right. So it's like, which is it? Is it like you fix different timelines? Is Alicia's timeline by the Vosk logic mean that Vosk logic? Does that mean
just my favorite Vosk. Thing in the world is Vosk
does
logic.
Does that mean that Alicia's gonna like live keep
like a new audio codec
by Vosk's logic? Does that mean that Alicia's gonna continue to live in her own fucked up timeline, or is her timeline gonna change? But then in the Orville, actually, to bring up the Orville, they brought up this concept of like, I think it was the Orville, I don't know if Star Trek's ever done it, whereas the people whose time was getting changed, like aka like Alicia, E.G. Alicia.
In this case, E.G., yes.
Yes. That person, Alicia's character, according to this Orville episode's logic, I'm almost done with this.
I'm not. Yeah.
Okay. I saw Patrick's looking at his watch.
Okay. Just to clarify for the home audience, Dan was justifiably thrown off there because I did look at my watch, but that's because I've got one of them, our smartwatches, and a message came through. Mm-hmm. And because I'm a modern human being, I have literally no control over myself.
Look at the notification. Somebody that we know.
It was a message from a mutual acquaintance. A mutual acquaintance that all three of us know, but that our audience is perhaps
we
not
don't
so
have to mention that.
It's classified.
But yes, Dan.
Okay, so by this episode's logic, Alicia would have been bummed out that they were changing because it meant
push
that
back because on the idea wait, that this because, episode has any logic.
But wait, but it just let me. But because she would be bummed out that they're changing her timeline because she would no longer exist as she knew it because her timeline
well,
would have been changed.
It doesn't matter her because time, she just goes on living as she
no,
used to.
No, I'm look. Yeah. I'm bringing up
before
this
before the Nazis came.
I'm bringing up this episode of the Orville where they introduced this concept where the person
when everybody was just racist.
I'm bringing up this episode of the Orville. Who brought up this concept that the person whose timeline is being changed is like, fuck, you're changing my timeline. Me, as I know it today, will cease to exist. You'll essentially be erasing me from everything.
You see, no, but no, you she's might not care. Erased.
And she's not erased from anything because the Nazis had only been there for a few years.
Yeah.
Well, I was just bringing up this alternate sort of viewpoint of how timeline science works.
I don't agree. In most other episodes,
timelineology.
In most other episodes of Star Trek, and while Star Trek has treated time travel in a huge number of different ways, they usually pick one way per episode, right? It's whatever works for that particular episode. This episode has picked like 10 different ways to think about time travel.
I know.
And it's not unique to this episode. It's a consistent problem with the temporal Cold War conceit. And the temporal Cold War is such a cool idea. I can see why they were like, this is cool. Ever since they're watching the first episode of Enterprise when it aired back in the day on UPN in 2001, right before September 11th or after, I forget, right after. I was aggravated with the introduction of this, yes, cool sci-fi idea, but this was advertised as a prequel, and now they're already adding in this future nonsense. Mm-hmm. And it made me nervous, and I think justifiably nervous, because I do think overall, the temporal Cold War timeline business is probably the weakest part. Individual episodes, I think, can be quite good, but like I think overall it was kind of like this. It weighed the series down a little bit to have this going on in the background.
Yeah, they felt like they had to include bits of it here and there to reference it. But like, so for this exchange, T'Pol says, Daniels to Malcolm, who Malcolm loved this whole everything. Oh, yeah. He was having a great time this episode.
You know,
he was loving it.
He's a history nerd.
But T'Pol says, Daniels said that different factions in the Temporal War are changing history throughout the timeline. Maybe this assassin was working for one of them. And then Reed says, but I thought we were here to prevent Vosk from starting the Temporal War. And then Archer says, chicken or the egg. And it's like, they only kind of hinted at something
exactly,
there. They didn't really explore that idea.
It didn't
Yeah,
there was no chicken and egg situation.
Yeah, they were like, we'll kill Vosk to prevent it, but then he's like, well, but Vosk is the reason. What is it? What she says? She says, this assassin's working. I thought we were here to prevent Vosk. Yeah, I don't know. It was all fucking weird.
It was, so it was not clear.
I went around.
Chicken or the egg.
Chicken or the egg, Marty. I looked online. I looked on Reddit.
Chicken and eggs.
I looked up old conversations or tried to anyway on
Trek
BBS.
Chicken
and
the egg.
To see how people discuss this, and there was a lot of argument. Some people saying, like, no, it makes sense if you think of it this way. Other people were saying, no, it doesn't make sense.
Those people are stupid.
I'll go with the producers, who, if you look on Memory Alpha and a couple other sources, the producers themselves were kind of like, we were just kind of getting through this. We were trying to, like, closing down this storyline because it had these problems. All these
the
problems came up.
Will the chicken and the egg? Chicken and the egg.
So nice. Even the showrunners themselves were like,
I think that the fourth season, they were trying to get into what they knew was going to be some pretty meaty, tasty, delicious stuff, which was true.
It's chicken liver with grated cheddar.
Your favorite. These episodes are fun. They have a lot of stuff that's worthwhile in them. But this whole time travel business is goofy. It's particularly goofy in this case. Later episodes in season four are largely much more coherent, I think, and they kind of they chopped off some of the dead weight here with the time travel, closed on the Zindi stuff, and then they get to move on to these little two or three episode arcs that they did with the Andorians and with the genetically modified people and another Soong and all that. Like, there's some pretty cool stuff
right.
going on.
I was looking at some of those episodes on the menu, and some of them look really interesting, like the one with Brent Spiner.
The trick is though you're in it for like 3 episodes for each of those. You can't watch just one of them because
with grated cheddar.
and we've already talked about the episode that comes after these episodes, the one where they go back to the Vulcan planet.
Yeah, Home. That was one of the few kind of standalone episodes in this series.
So the assassin killed Lennon, and because and then they said the assassin vanished, but the Lennon was
could transport out, but the other ones couldn't transport.
So the assassin assassin was causing all these problems. He caused the Nazis to take power, and they were like, "Well, here to get Vosk." So I guess by killing Vosk, Vosk never is in before, which is in the future, which sends the assassin back to further back time. Yeah, it's weird, man. Sorry, I'm just trying to like parse this in my head.
I can understand the inclination towards needing to
but there's nothing there to parse.
But that's the problem. It's kind of like when somebody's like, "I don't understand. I was trying to explain my position to this person," and you're like, "The person is acting irrationally."
Yeah,
you cannot use an irrational argument.
I think
if a person is in an irrational
mood, logic and religion.
I think it's to apply a different strategy.
I think it's the temporal science version of technobabble, where they're just saying a bunch of stuff, and you're like, "Okay,
sit down, sit down, be quiet, kid, be quiet."
It's like, I guess it makes sense. Yeah. Sure, whatever.
No, it doesn't have to make sense.
That's a good way to put it, I think.
Yeah.
Because like if that temporal agent guy hadn't been all fucked up and deformed, he would have just started slapping everybody and been like, "Listen, guys, get back in shape."
That was awesome. That fucking fucked up Daniels.
Yeah,
that was like some Star Trek. That was some Star Trek gore. Right,
it was
there.
Really messed
I
up.
Agree.
It was hard to watch. It was like I'm glad when that guy like finally died, because it was like, "Oh my god."
Yeah, that was some classic Star Trek fucked up makeup.
Well, what's cool about that,
because it did keep that fucked up
that
shit
crazy on. Chin that was all like
I really liked about that was the fact that you see him, right? You see Daniels and you're like, "Oh my god, Daniels looks all fucked up and weird.
My name's Dan."
And then you know what? Yes, Dan.
And then he's wearing that crazy outfit at the end.
But this guy's last name is Daniels.
Is your first name Daniel?
Dan
no,
Daniels.
No, it's not.
Your name
Dan Daniels.
I have a secret about my name.
Dan has an open secret.
I have an open secret. Like
super open
secret. Festering open secret.
Like my pants. I walk around with open pants.
Well.
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, my point being that I'm attempting to get out.
Okay. Let's do it.
Yeah. Let's do it. Evidence. You did that on purpose because you're clever.
Okay. Let's do it.
Okay. What I was saying about
Chief O'Brien. Okay, I'm done.
What I was saying about how fucked up Daniels looked was that, yes, indeed, he looked fucked up, and then it was even more fucked up when Phlox was all like, "I don't know. It appears like some of him is like 800 years, and some is almost." Fetal.
Oh, yeah. Fetal,
and then you imagine like the physical processes that could potentially be involved in that, and it's horrifying.
It was a nightmare.
It's way more horrifying than just how he looked.
It's a biological
Denobulan lullaby.
I know, nobody wants to hear a Denobulan lullaby. Yeah,
not necessarily.
That whole like part of him is old, part of him's a baby, like conjured all this imagry in my head that was fucked up.
I think it was such a great example of combining excellent visual with excellent dialogue because the thing is, you know, one advantage that people often mention about books, right?
Books.
An advantage to books.
I like books.
I like books.
Back in my day,
that's my favorite
TV
book.
Was called books. One of the advantages, purported advantages to books. Is
that's one of my favorite books.
Oh my god, we stepped after the time loop. It's horrifying. One of those one of the purported advantages.
Your favorite.
Do books.
Books. I can't stop. I'll stop.
Is that you use your imagination to fill in the blanks, and that is why a horror book or a mystery or not like is often can be more engrossing than a movie or a television show, because it's in your mind, you're crafting it. It's really custom to what's going to work for you. Sort of the ideal thing.
Sometimes books are scarier.
Precisely.
Especially the first time you read them.
First time I read Michael Crichton's Sphere, I was all scared.
Right? That's a fucked up scary book.
Yeah.
Some of those Lovecraft stories are pretty fucked up.
Lovecraft, Lovecraft is a very good example, because it's talking about like it's like talking about like, oh, it's a horror. So like, if you even looked at it for a half a second, your mind would melt.
Totally melt.
There's no superpowers involved. It's just so confusing that it makes you go insane.
Cyclopean
that concept in writing is it can be more impactful. Mm. And And I think by and large, that's true. But I think when you have really good writing and production in movies and television, they combine a little of that in there. Mm. They add some of that in there where they're like, here, you're seeing what's happening. But by clever use of dialogue, we can help conjure some other stuff going on in your brain, right? That's beyond what you're seeing. And I think this here with Daniels is a very good example of precisely that.
I agree. Earlier when I played the Chief O'Brien's sound clip, Jesse said...
Which sound clip are you referring to?
I'm referring to the Chief O'Brien sound clip.
I was ready to say it, Chief O'Brien.
Because you've got like a lot of sound clips. I just wanted to check which one you're referring to.
Chief.
Oh, it's this one.
Chief O'Brien.
Oh, yes, that one. Yes,
earlier when I played it, Jesse said it at the exact same time.
I know, it was so cool. Because I was like, I'm just going to say it, and then like you were just, I'm going to hit it.
Yeah, we were syncing.
It's pretty rad.
It's a podcast miracle.
It's like when it's a podcast. It's like when you're jamming. When you have a jam session, you sync on the frequency.
Because we used to do that when we jammed back in the day.
Yeah.
Now you're verbally jamming. Yeah. You're just verbally jamming up on each other.
And then we fuck.
All right. Well, how about before we get to that part, let's take a quick break. And
the fucking part?
Yes. Before we get to the fucking part, where we do a mutual fuck.
Ah, yes.
Which is, I think, what the kids call it these days, the young people. Before we get to that part of the podcast, and for new listeners, definitely stick around for that. You're going to love it. Yeah. Before we get to that, when we come back, we will have a little quiz. I have a very brief quiz. I will conduct the quiz, and Jesse and Dan, and by extension, the audience, will participate. All right. We will be right back. All right, we're back. Okay. Back in black.
Back.
I'm wearing some kind of gray. Heather gray, I think is what they call it.
Heather gray.
I'm wearing lavender.
Heather gray.
Is this lavender or lilac?
I could go either way on that. It's lilac.
Lavender or lilac?
And
lilac.
The lighting we have in the studio is...
Lilac's a bit lighter.
Is a warm
Perhaps
lighting.
Bluer.
It's a warm lighting we've chosen in the studio.
It's...
So it's hard to tell.
It's closer
to lavender.
Not too warm. I would agree with you, sorry.
Yes. I don't know. I might play the devil's advocate and advocate...
The lilac's advocates.
For the lilac side of things.
I can erase you from history.
We should take it... Well, take a picture of Jesse's shirt and we'll put it online. We'll just take a super close-up picture of Jesse's shirt. Dan and I will each take our own picture and we'll post them both online so that way there's no bias.
No bias here.
And then on the social media, you can determine whether or not Jesse's shirt is lilac or lavender.
Or hibiscus.
But
hibiscus? Hibiscus is not a... Is that a color too?
Well, it's a flower.
Well, I know what it is.
It's not purple. It's not purple.
No. No, it's not.
Why'd you bring it up,
it's
Jesse?
It's a wild card.
Why are you bringing this up?
It's a diversion.
I'm going to kill this guy.
It's a misdirect.
How about if we pulled out your tongue?
Okay.
How about I start removing your teeth with my knuckles?
I like that line. That was a good line.
How about I start removing your teeth with my knuckles?
Carmine. He was in Sopranos and
he
other
was,
stuff.
Okay. He was like,
well, this is what
Bobby
we're getting
Bacala.
To. This is what
oh,
we're
shit.
Getting
did
to.
Did I accidentally give away
no,
one
no,
of the
no,
answers?
No, because that's too obvious. There's no sort of quiz. I was going to introduce the quiz by noting that there's a lot of interesting guest stars in these two parts.
Mm-hmm. From contemporary TV shows.
And the quiz is about one of those.
One of those stories.
So,
look, you son of a bitch.
So first, yes, we have Stephen Shripa, who was on The Sopranos as and he played Carmine in this episode. Joe Maruzzo also was on The Sopranos. He was the guy who played Sal.
Ah, Sal.
And,
oh, who is he on The Sopranos?
I don't know. I didn't see The Sopranos.
Oh,
what do
man.
You mean, these people?
Well, they, yeah.
I didn't say that.
Yes, they were on The Sopranos, and it's important to note that it's not just a happenstance that they were on The Sopranos. This was stunt casting.
Happenstance?
They were doing stunt casting because The Sopranos was popular. This aired in October of 2004. Sopranos started, I think, 2002. It was already a successful show at that point, so this was... very purposefully done by UPN in their effort, along with having Nazis and all this other stuff, in their effort to get ratings, get eyeballs on this show. They hired these two folks from The Sopranos, and I thought it worked very well. Both these characters were fun. We can talk about them more in a second. Another bit of stunt casting was Golden Brooks, who played Alicia Towers.
Right, that was, Travers, that was Alicia, a, Travers. Another show at the time.
Yeah, she was on Girlfriends, which was a big UPN show, and this was a Enterprise was aired on UPN, right? So it was another thing going on where they're trying to do some synergy.
What else is new?
But anyway, that was a bit of stunt casting that was going on. John Fleck played Silic again, and Silic was his main thing that he did in Star Trek, but he's done a lot of other Star Trek.
Silic.
John Fleck's all over Star Trek. He played the
silly Jerry.
He played the Romulan Tabak in The Mind's Eye, which is the one where Geordi gets brainwashed.
Yeah.
He played a Cardassian overseer in DS9's The Homecoming. Mm-hmm. He played a weird alien named Ornithar on Deep Space Nine's The Search Part One.
Ornithar.
He played a
was he a bird?
No, interestingly enough, I thought the same thing.
Yeah.
He played a Romulan named Koval in Deep Space Nine's Inter Arma Enim Sealant Legis.
I didn't think that, not because I'm like too smart. It's because I'm not as smart as you guys, and I didn't make the connection.
You're way smarter than us.
He played a weird alien in Voyager's Alice. So basically, he's been on Deep Space Nine, Voyager, TNG, Enterprise. So John Fleck is one of those character actors who the producers went back to a lot.
And he has a band, John Fleck and the Flecktones, right? Isn't that him? Or am I thinking someone else?
Regardless, while you look that up.
Is it Bela Fleck? Is that what it is? Bela Lugosi and the Flecktones? Hey! It's word connection time!
Very good, Dan. You're good, you.
Free association.
We have some other Star Trek luminaries or semi-luminaries because Tom Wright played Graf, and he is probably most famous in Star Trek for playing Tuvix on Voyager.
That's right. And the guy in Seinfeld.
And he's the guy in Seinfeld.
Mr. Morgan.
He's probably more famous for Seinfeld, but
I have nothing to say to you.
In Star Trek
land. That's the only Graf line I have. He didn't last too long.
You should have pulled some lines from Tuvix.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, like, that would have been better.
How about that scene in Tuvix where he's all like, I want to live. We're all friends. You're going to let her kill me?
Oh, no.
You know that part?
Oh, bummer.
What a fucked up You also, of course, have Matt Winston reprising his role as Daniels. Now, the cute thing about Matt Winston is that he's the son of Stan Winston.
Yeah.
And Stan Winston was a very famous
special effects
guy. Like one of the most famous special effects people ever.
Hollywood.
And with both Matt Winston and John Fleck, they're great actors. I actually like their characters. I like Silic. I like Daniels. It's the temporal Cold War didn't do them any favors. So, but like every time John Fleck showed up, it was like pretty awesome. I mean, it's an interesting character to interact with as long as you didn't look directly at the morphing CGI.
Who was that one regular? This is a terrible description. It's not going to be at all helpful. But he's
all right, I'm getting ready for this.
He's the regular. He does regular appearances as different characters. He has the mustache. He's losing
his hair.
Yeah, he has the side hair, and he's a larger fellow, and he's in a lot of episodes of Star Trek. And he's kind of like he's always like, hey, I'm a guy, and I'm just a no harm done kind of guy.
He's not in that many.
I'm a no harm done kind of guy.
I know exactly the guy you're talking about. Right?
He usually plays like a humanoid.
Was he the guy?
He usually plays like a human type of character.
In Office Space, was he the guy with the
jump to the conclusion? Yeah, that guy. Good. That's a better way of describing him than my way.
Which is why I selected it.
Yeah, good.
From my brain.
Yeah, my brain didn't work that. Yeah, he wasn't in this episode.
No. But he's been in some.
Yeah, you know what? That's an excellent point, Dan. Now, have you observed any other actors in Star Trek who are not in this episode?
Richard Reel.
Yeah, Richard Reel. He's a good one.
Iggy Pop wasn't in this episode. He played.
That's right. He was only in one episode of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. Wouldn't have been great if he was in this episode.
Then you have Jack Gwaltney.
Oh, are you asking? Or are you saying it wouldn't have? Were you like it wouldn't? Wouldn't it have been great?
Wouldn't it have been great?
Yes, it would.
Would that it were, but it weren't, as it were. So Jack Gwaltney played played Bosk. Now Jack Gwaltney is from Richmond, which is not too far from where we are.
Richmond, Virginia.
Really? I used to live in Richmond.
Both of you lived in Richmond.
You're damn right. At the same goddamn time.
I only was there for like 2 months. Jesse was like a legit Richmondier.
Yeah, we were partying.
A legit Richmondier?
Richmondium.
I lived there for a few years.
I
don't trust these people.
There's some other people, but in terms of the important people in this plot, that leaves one other person, J. Paul Bammer.
Bammer.
No, J. Paul Bama. I know, J. Paul Bomer? Bammer? Bomer? What? That's what it's spelled. I'm looking at my notes right here. B-O-E-H-M-E-R. Bomer. Bammer? Bamer. Like Hainer?
Bamer.
Like,
Bamer.
Like Bamer. John Bamer?
I think it's Bamer,
who
yeah.
Was the,
oh, that the, guy. That guy's
from Ohio? Politician?
B-O-E-H.
Or the Hainer? Mouth harps,
Mark harmonica.
You know the harmonicas, the mouth harps.
They make guitars too.
Hainer, right?
You are a fool.
J. Paul
Everybody
Bamer.
Says Honer.
Okay,
but it's Hainer.
Let's
so,
do it
here. So here's the quiz for you. This is the
finally,
quiz.
Finally got there.
This is the quiz portion of this podcast program.
10 minutes later.
Yes, and the quiz is this. J. Paul Bamer. He played. Hold on, let me
SS agents.
Yes, he played the well. They name in one place they call him SS agent, but they also call him he played.
Spaceships.
Oh yeah, he's the Nazi SS Untersturmführer.
He went to the University of Delaware.
Is he this guy?
Betty Grable.
Yes. So that's J. Paul Bamer, the SS Untersturmführer.
Bamer.
So my question for you is, I'll give you the clue. The clue is, we've seen this
what
guy.
What, is this Jeopardy?
Yes. No, you don't have to follow the Jeopardy format.
Okay.
But you do have to provide an answer to the question.
We're just getting a normal clue.
The clue is that this guy has been on Star Trek before. Where might we have seen J. Paul Bamer? Don't look it up.
I'm not looking it up. Looking at his face.
Look at his face.
Voyager and Deep Space Nine.
Okay, maybe. But
how would I know this?
Okay, you might know this for a few reasons, because this is interesting. First of all, it's
better be interesting to me too.
Well, we're gonna find out, aren't we?
He's in the Thomas Crown Affair.
You reserve the. I told you not to look it up.
I already looked it up before we. You told me not.
Well,
to
stop
look it up.
Looking at it. So okay,
that's
now
how I knew it was.
I got. Dan, it's I got the looks.
Yes. So okay. So
it's classified.
Let's go through what else we've seen him in Star Trek.
Is he play? Does he put on alien makeup?
He does.
There's no way I'm going to be able to.
When you hear, I know. So now I was, I had reserved on your behalf the right to not be impressed. But now that you've said that, I guarantee.
Okay.
You'll be impressed.
Guarantee.
So,
J. Paul Bamer.
He was on Voyager. This one, I'm not. Some of these, there's no reason for you to expect to necessarily know this, right?
J. Paul
he was on Voyager in the episode one as a Borg one. Drone. It's like where they find like a Borg drone.
He looks like a Borg, yeah.
So it's like, okay, all right, he's got a Borg makeup. You know, and who knows? Maybe you haven't seen that episode in a long time. Maybe you haven't seen it. Okay.
They're kind of like Nazis.
Don't worry about it.
Our Borg are kind of like Nazis.
Don't worry about that.
Sort of.
He was also in Deep Space Nine, tacking into the wind as the Cardassian named Vornar.
I knew he was a Cardassian. I should have said that.
I'm a diehard Deep Space Nine person. I barely remember that character.
Yeah, I don't remember him. I was just wanting to say Cardassian.
You remember certain Cardassians.
Yeah, and he's a good Cardassian, like, but he's not a big role, right? He's not a super big deal.
You
right?
remember like two Cardassians.
Right? All right, now here's where it gets a little bit there's two levels of interestingness to this particular situation. Mm-hmm. The audience at home is already bored because they've looked it up and they're like, oh, I know where he's going. I know where this Patrick fella's going.
As soon as you said don't look it up, they looked it up.
It's because this audience is a naughty audience.
That's what the kids do nowadays.
Naughty audience looking on their...
I'll blow your ugly head off.
You told me not to do it.
On their devices. So...
Find it.
Where you might recognize him. What, level one.
Maybe you might.
Layer one.
Oh, boy.
You may recognize him from this very series, Enterprise. From an episode we covered a while back, a little episode called Carbon Creek.
Oh, no.
In which he plays the I Love Lucy loving Mestrel.
Ah.
He's like the main Vulcan dude. He's the guy who ends up
winning
the
guy.
He's that guy.
Huh.
That's a good episode of the podcast, by the way.
I didn't realize.
It's a good episode of Enterprise, and it's a good episode of the podcast. I didn't look up which number of the podcast it was. It was a while back.
That was a good one.
And he was all into
it. Was a good podcast.
He was all into watching I Love Lucy.
I suppose
I would have done the same.
We have a lot of good episodes of this podcast.
I know.
We're amazing.
I know. We're really
In case you didn't know, you should... People at home.
Yeah, check them out.
Listen to the episode.
Don't listen to all of them. But most of them, there are several,
and you can take your pick.
There's a few
clunkers
in here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But we're not going to tell you which ones. You can discover that on your own.
That's on you.
But yes, so he played Mestral, and that's pretty interesting, right? Wouldn't you say that's fairly interesting? Maybe not the most interesting, but it's kind of cool, right, Dan?
It's cool, for sure. I wouldn't say it's interesting, like, huh? But it's more like, oh, cool.
How about this?
It's more like, oh, cool.
I think you already sound to me like
but
you're
it wasn't
ready.
Like, it wasn't like a, huh?
You're ready for level two, I think. That's okay. What I'm getting. I think you're ready for level two of interestingness.
Incredible.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. Which is, we're going to go back. We're going to go back to Voyager. I know we mentioned he was on Voyager, the episode one, playing a Borg drone, but we're going to go back to a different episode. Two-parter. Voyager's two-parter, The Killing Game, parts one and two, which...
I'm going to kill this guy.
The Killing Game... We focused on it was also a Nazi episode. It was a two-part Nazi episode.
That guy's in the Nazi
And in that one, he played an SS Hauptsturmführer. He got demoted in this one.
See, that's more like a huh.
But what's funny is when you see the pictures of him playing those characters, he's just a guy wearing an SS uniform.
That's a colonel.
I don't know the equivalence.
So I would say level one was like cool. Level two was like huh, and then level three is like huh.
Nazis in the audience.
Yes, that's right, Jesse. Nazis. If you didn't catch that, Dan, Jesse just implored the Nazis in the audience to let us know what the equivalence.
We don't know the ranks exactly.
There are. Sadly, there are a few.
I don't know. I'm just saying.
You notice it from the comments on YouTube when they're like, what is this woke bullshit?
I'm not going to say anything to that. But
These guys are talking nice about ladies.
If you know the lore, let us know.
Level three was like, huh?
There was no level three. I didn't advertise level three.
You said the level one and level two. The level two was that he was an SS guy. The level three is that the picture was the same. He was wearing the same uniform.
I think that's a sub point under level two.
I disagree.
Okay.
What about those alien dudes? They had like a face full of noses.
What was that?
They had noses all the fucking
What is he talking about? Face full of. What are you talking about?
Those Nazi aliens. They
he's
had
talking
like,
about the Nakul.
They
was
had
that
like
their
these
name?
Spikes on their faces.
I think they were called the Nakul.
Is that what they're.
I don't know.
They had cool eyes, but their faces were crazy.
Wasn't that called
Martians?
Martian?
We're over 200 years in the past.
We are 200 years in the past.
He says it's a matter of fact. One final little bit of trivia.
He's the most pissed off.
Jay Bomer he was born in Dayton, Ohio.
Oh,
that's where my daddy grew up.
That's where Daytona
is. Your ancestral homeland.
He grew up in Kettering, but you know, they all say they're from Dayton.
Daytona.
It's like we say we're from D.C. We're not from D.C.
Daytona is in Dayton.
We're from Northern Virginia.
Daytona is in Dayton. The Daytona 500 is in Dayton. They call it the Daytona.
Dan, we have an international audience, and some people might interpret what you're saying now is being making fun of them somehow. That they might not be familiar with the geography of the country.
I don't think anyone thinks that.
I think some people might be like, he's fucking with us.
I think most people are going to say that because...
No, they might think I'm making fun of Dayton, but not the people who are not from the U.S. I'm not making fun of them. But Patrick assumes that I am because I'm like trying to pull a fast one on them, right? So the next time they go to Dayton, they'll be like, is this where Daytona 500 is? And people are like, oh, Dan told you that, didn't he?
Yeah, I have to put him aside. Yeah, don't fuck around with that Daytona 500 in Florida, though. Jesse and I, we went down with the families to Key West 1 year. Did not know.
You can't get a hotel.
Did not know Daytona 500 was
a hotel.
We had our hotel.
You didn't know that the Daytona 500 was a busy, like,
no, no,
experience?
We didn't know it was happening.
Nope, we didn't. We're dumb.
Our hotel in Key West was booked. We were good there. It was on the 1,300-mile drive. We were unable to get a hotel anywhere in Florida because everything was booked up in Florida.
St. Augustine down.
Yeah. So Yes. Dayton, Ohio. J. Paul Bamer.
Bamer.
He was in a bunch of, you might be interested, Dan.
Your favorite.
A lot. He did a lot of voice work in Star Trek video games.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was after I looked it up.
Right on.
I learned that.
And so we got to review some more of those video games, and we'll have to do some like cool video game stuff.
Star Trek Bridge Commander.
There's a lot of good Star Trek video game
Klingon
action.
Academy. He's in the Thomas Crown Affair.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a great movie.
He's a graduate of the University of Delaware.
Mm-hmm.
Dan is unimpressed.
And yeah,
I'm looking up Star Trek games. And
I'm going to stop talking. And what do you have to say?
I think it's Bridge Commander. I have Bridge Commander, but also
it sounds cool.
Yeah, but then there's also a VR one that I haven't played on the PlayStation, that where you like take control of, like, you're one of the crewsmen.
Cruiseman. Are you cruising?
Are you cruising?
And then,
for
of course,
bruising?
There's Star Trek.
You're always cruising for a bruising.
There's Star. Yeah, I know you. There's Star Trek Resurgence, which Tark so wonderfully gave me, and which I'm going to be playing soon. Like I said, I have to fit it in between Tears of the Kingdom and Starfield. So,
man.
Starfield. What's that?
Our lives are miserable.
Some huge game that's going to take forever to play.
Oh Lord.
Okay, we discussed earlier about how the time travel stuff is, you have to kind of overlook it. And even the writers are kind of telling us, they're just pushing it through and saying, like, don't pay attention to it, just enjoy the story. And I think part of what helps that is that they have all these characters, and they're very well portrayed, and everyone's having a good time playing these roles. And then they also have a lot of just really memorable imagery, like dudes getting shot in the head in the middle
of
the
street. Oh my God, yeah.
Like the Daniels grossness thing.
Yeah, the two most violent scenes were probably that dude getting shot,
just
like
summarily executed.
Yeah, and then there's another scene where Carmine shoots some dude in the neck.
Yes.
Like
because and he's like, and the guy grabs, gets shot, right?
And then the guy grabs his neck, like, oh
yeah, and gurgles.
Yeah, and Tuvix, yeah, he gets fucked up. I can't remember if Tuvix bled or not.
And Silic,
well, he gets shot in the hand first.
Silic gets blasted.
Yeah, that's right.
Silic gets blasted.
Yeah, he's all
there was some
up.
Blood there.
But then you also have the Nazi White House, which is like, now it's kind of comical because on the one hand, like the CGI and the framing,
it's like a CGI. It looks like the house from The Fresh Prince, or Benson.
And the CGI tank is weird, and it's not even the whole White House, right? That's the other. Like, it's kind
of
like.
It's part of it.
It's missing some buildings around. Like, we
and
live
the tank
here.
Looks like a cartoon.
Yeah, I walk by the White House on a very regular basis, and it's like it's just funny when it looks so it's so wrong. But at the same time, it carries more weight nowadays to see a White House covered in swastikas because you're like, oh, that's not as far-fetched.
Yeah.
We actually had a Nazi.
Bummer.
It was back in 2004.
Bummer.
So there was that weird little twinge when you see that image. It makes it a little extra power to that image.
So some of the effects, like the CGI, pretty much all the CGI, I can't tell if it was just a relic of its, or just an artifact of its era, or if they were just not great CGI, even for its era. But like, it was still entertaining.
It's old. It was TV.
Cool. Yeah.
It was UPN.
I mean, let's see, there's the P-51 battle. I guess that was fine.
Was this when they started filming the show in digital?
Yes, fourth season was the first season that Star Trek was
filmed. And that's when
digitally.
Other shows started doing digital too, like Curb Your Enthusiasm.
So the first three seasons were on film.
There was another one of the scary parts, which was CGI, was the scary backwards crawling ceiling silic guy monster where it couldn't figure out which way it was forward. That was fucked up. But that was kind of actually cool CGI.
I know one of my cool CGI things was I thought the Enterprise flying into the sunset.
That's what I was going to mention. That was really good.
It was
a great
shot,
awesome.
And it was a unique shot. You don't really see quite a shot
that
like
was
that
super cool
elsewhere in Star Trek.
That was playing to the strengths of CGI.
The shuttlecraft CGI looked like.
Star Trek Enterprise was not known to be particularly groundbreaking in terms of framing and cinematography. They had a few good things to highlight.
It's kind of like in Voyager when they went and visited Sarah Silverman on Earth.
Yes, Future's End, another two-parter, but that one doesn't have any Nazis.
But that one had the Voyager flying through the sky.
On like a VHS camcorder.
And it looked really good because it played to the strengths of the time. Speaking of like the Silic Monster, both...
Silic Monster, he's a man. He's a person.
When both there was,
he has a soul.
Both Archer Both,
I mean, I don't know.
Both are.
Do aliens have souls?
Both are.
No.
We got to call up the Pope.
We're all human here.
Both Archer and Trip Tucker III were had to like wrestle with the silly
Captain,
guy.
Captain.
As he like.
Captain, this guy's real squirrely.
As he like squirted away. I thought that Trip Tucker III.
Captain, this guy's like wrestling a pig.
I thought Trip Tucker III did a.
Wrestling a pig in Pensacola.
I thought Trip Tucker III did a better job of like wrangling with Silic than Archer. You could see Trip Tucker's arms sort of squishing with it. But like
Trip
Archer,
Tucker's been in a few but like Archer's used to punching people in the face. Trip is used to getting down
just,
in the mud.
Well, I'm just saying the
Trip has done some stick fighting.
He was locked up in a hallway.
Okay. I should have specified Connor Trinneer versus Scott Bakula, because actually acting the part out, Connor Trinneer did a good job of like pretending there was something there, whereas Archer just kind of like gripped his arm statically. Although I would say that the shot with Archer was a harder shot probably to pull off.
That's a good joke. The shot with Archer.
Oh, yeah, that's a good joke.
It's an archery joke.
Yeah, it is. So, that's very funny. That's a
what,
good...
what do you think about this show? I don't know. It's
a bullseye.
It's a bit archery.
So
this show's a bit archery for my taste.
So I thought that it was a tricky scene. Having
it needs to be more musketry.
No, it needs to be more trippy. I like a trippy episode of Enterprise.
I thought the scene...
Is it a little too archery? I don't know. Sorry. I couldn't help it because it's fun.
I thought the scene where Silic was squishing away from Archer was probably harder to do, but like his arm was like kind of, I don't know, it was kind of a goofy scene. I'm just going through all the CGI scenes.
No, I agree. This is good. Hey, how about this? Let's take a quick break and then continue the list of CGI.
Okay.
And then close things up. All right. We'll take a quick break and we will be right back.
Are we back?
We're back now. We weren't sure, but you made it. You confirmed it, Dan. All right, CGI. So, continuing down the list of both good and bad CGI.
So there was the historic footage of Germany and the U.S., which, how would you compare that with what was done in Forrest Gump? Because remember Forrest Gump, they did all this stuff where they put the Forrest Gump in place.
It's
in,
just
in
not quite the same
events.
Because most of it is just decontextualized existing footage where they just using dialogue, just say it something different.
You're right.
Right. But there were a few where they added some stuff in. And I thought that for the part two opener, it was a fairly powerful opener because they didn't do anything else. It was just the Hitler propaganda reel. And I think where it hits you is you're like, oh, I'm not seeing any other part. The teaser is solely this propaganda reel. So that positions you as an audience into an uncomfortable place. And I thought it was pretty well done because it was kind of freaky to the concept of the Germans, of the Nazis taking over this section of the Northeast, which is why that whole map scene, you know, the Risk style, the Axis and Allies.
Oh yeah, I want to go to that in a second.
All right, but CGI.
But
another special effects.
Speaking of the opening, I took a shot because I thought it was kind of jarring, the opening going into the intro. This is the
two great nations marching side by side toward a bold future.
It's been a long, long
time. This is the one with the extra jazzy beat.
Yeah, I like it better. I just thought that was going to be...
It's like that one's part of the propaganda.
Yeah, I know. It was a jarring transition. It was... One might even say it was anachronistic or something.
Yes, anachronistic is good, but I agree, Jesse. It's kind of feel like it's like, yeah, everything's... Hitler's groovy.
Right.
It's been a long It's too bad time. They didn't do what they did later in this season with the... In a Mirror Darkly episodes where they actually changed the intro to Mirror Universe style. It would have been interesting to have like the Nazi version of a Star Trek intro. Obviously, they were limited with budget and or creativity, but can you imagine that? If you're doing a Nazi episode, do one where there's an alternate timeline where the Nazis won or at least had more victories than before, then that would be something I'd like to see.
Like some kind of like marching music or something.
So the next CGI, there's that awesome shot of the Nazi plasma cannon. That's all like it's like so. That was really cheesy. Like, it was awesome.
It was also kind of sexual.
Right. And then they shot back.
I mean, I don't know. To me, it seems sexual.
And then back then they had phase cannons, which is what they shot back with, but they also had photonic torpedoes, which is different than photon torpedoes. We've had this discussion between photonic torpedoes and photon torpedoes.
It's silly.
I can't remember how it goes.
It's silly.
Yeah.
It's like when you say like acoustical.
Photonic. It's like photon-ish, you know? It's not like a photon torpedo, but it's photon-ish. It's
so romantic.
It's photonic.
There was the Stuka battle.
Yeah, the Stuka fighters and with plasma cannons, that was kind of badass. Even though the CGI maybe wasn't wonderful, the concept of these German Nazi fighters, but with future plasma cannons on them, was both funny and sort of terrifying.
And there was the part where Reed was talking, Malcolm was talking to Paul. He was like German dive bombers, Stukas, nothing too much to worry about.
7.65 millimeter cannons.
However, they were fitted with sirens to frighten the enemy during an attack. They fire 7.9 millimeter rounds.
Right.
And so Paul's like,
she was getting bored.
Yeah, she was like, this is not the point. Know, right? But like, this is an example of Malcolm. He was really loving all this historical shit. And for a second, I was like, why did they even include that scene? But then I figured it out. It's because the Stuka cannons fired lasers, and they wanted the audience to know. It's like, this is what they're supposed to have. This is what they're supposed to have.
Now they have this.
Someone's got a case of the supposed does. Cool. The Stuka battle, that was fun. I mean, it was fun. It was fun. I liked it.
Did you think it was fun?
I did. The Nazi plasma cannon, which was weird and goofy, I also liked. Like,
it was where cool. all rose up and was like, boom.
Yeah, it was sexual. So Vosk going all wazzy while he time warps and blows up at the
Australian
same time.
Now? Are you using Australian slangisms?
Vosk.
Where you put an O and a Z?
Can you wait till
Huzzy and Buzzy?
I can finish the sentence, and then you can interject with that comment.
No.
You can wait till I finish the sentence.
All right.
You can wait till I finish the sentence and then interject.
But I would have forgotten by that.
Okay, that's... I have to take into account your medical needs. I'm sorry.
Precisely.
When Voss was going crazy, when he was going to blow up and time warp at the same time, you know?
Let's do the time warp again.
It was that scene. Yeah, that was weird.
He was all stretching around.
That was a weird scene. That was kind of an odd choice. That looked really cheesy, but also kind of awesome. I don't know. There was something really out of place about that to me, I thought, if you were to ask.
If, for sooth, an example.
It makes more sense for the Nazis to build some kind of intercontinental missile instead of a plasma cannon, because they're all into like the rockets. They were launching all those rockets at the British.
These are aliens.
Alien
weapons. I just Jesse would be the one being like, nah, you know, I don't think we need these futuristic plasma cannons. Let's just stick to the V2 rocket. Hey, we'll make a new one. We'll call it the V3.
Well, they had that.
Everyone will go wild.
They'll go wild for it.
It's crazy.
It'll be the sensation.
Well, we already talked about the timeline montage. That was kind of goofy. And then at the end, there was the shots of, as T'Pol says, dozens of vessels coming in. I counted there are exactly 2 dozen vessels coming in.
So
exactly.
Technically,
there were some neat looking vessels.
She was technically correct.
Some Vulcan
some
ships
Vulcan,
in there.
Some Federation.
And Dorian-ish ships.
Yeah,
there was one that looked like it was from the Phantom Menace or something. It was like that circle one. There was one that was
Vulcan ships are all the circular. Yeah.
Did that?
It looked like the Naboo.
So who came up with that? The Naboo thing first, I wonder.
Probably Star Trek.
I think it's Star Trek that came up with that, but I don't know. But I think so. I think it goes way back.
More like
the Vulcan stuff is kind of old. Yeah.
More like I poo. The map was cool.
The map, the Axis and Allies map,
like.
The whole idea again
in the 40s
occupying the White House,
that was the population of America, was like in the Northeast and the Midwest. Yes. Like there wasn't as much on the West Coast like there is today, right? Isn't that right?
I think to a certain degree, demographically. I think you are not too
like
far
that,
off.
That would be a big deal to just kind of roll in there and take that shit out.
Yeah. Although presumably a lot of people in the army and other people, you know, retreated back into the
across
the Mississippi.
It also makes sense that they would have been hung up like right there at the mountains, like in Ohio and
Virginia.
That's
Eastern Pennsylvania and Southern Virginia.
Mm-hmm. He said Pennsylvania.
Southern Virginia.
Pennsylvania. Right. Pennsylvania. See?
Yeah. Eastern Pennsylvania and Southern Virginia.
And that goes, you had a whole theory about English people and how they talk.
I don't think it's a theory. I think it's just how
is. Is that
is.
How it goes? That received checks?
With the whole adding an R to things.
It's if the end of a word is a vowel and the beginning of the next word is a vowel, they put an R between them.
Banana.
Yeah, precisely.
Banana if you
Jamaica.
If the next word started with a vowel. If you said banana
vaudeville.
If you said banana carrot, you'd just say banana carrot. But if you said banana apple, you'd say banana apple.
Banana carrot?
Banana
Do you listen to yourself when you talk to this?
Banana carrot, banana apple.
What is this banana carrot?
Bananarama.
Bananarama.
You
yes.
only add an R to a, you only add an R to a consonant if there's already an R there. Bananarama. I cut some time out. Doesn't this sound like a beat?
They mentioned recent battles in Virginia and Ohio.
Doesn't that sound like a fun beat?
They mentioned recent battles in Virginia and Ohio. They mentioned recent battles in Virginia and Ohio. They mentioned recent battles in Virginia and Ohio. They mentioned recent battles in Virginia and Ohio.
I think you should do something with it.
Well, yes, Jesse. Not only do I agree that he should do something with it. I also think, you know, you keep making these examples that sound great, and you're like, I should do this, and they don't do it.
I know, that's my
you gotta play them all together.
I'm always like, wouldn't it be great if this, I should do this, and then I just don't do it.
Well, write
you
in know, to
you
feedback.
You have like several albums worth of material.
Feedback at itsgotstartrek.com.
With great
with the subject line. The subject line should just be, Dan should do it.
I marked this one as beat. For
Dan
some,
can.
I marked this as beat.
It's chicken liver with grated cheddar.
Yeah. That's kind of like a beat.
It's chicken liver with grated cheddar.
It's chicken liver with grated cheddar.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's chicken liver with grated cheddar. With grated cheddar. With grated cheddar. With grated cheddar.
Flox, you old floxy bastard, you.
So I was looking at that map and
there wasn't a lot of grated cheddar in there. I could see why Porthos was pissed off.
It was a few slivers.
Was a few slivers. And honestly, chicken liver, come on. I don't know. I mean, maybe Porthos likes it.
Maybe
more
if you're
power
a
to
cat.
You.
Well, he
come on,
it
chicken
was,
liver.
That's cat food.
Well, it was confusing because he said chicken liver is your favorite. Then he's like, "You need a steak." Well, it's like, well, if chicken liver is his favorite, why would a steak be any better? Yeah. But it's because he was lying. Because, like you said, who wants chicken liver? He knew that
and
steak would have been good.
Who advertises shredded cheddar when there's like three measly little strips of little? Mm-hmm. Do you see that little three little shreds?
Bullshit. Maybe because it upset Porthos's stomach.
I think it's one of those deals where Phlox was
he was
eating it as he was preparing it. And he just ate most of the cheese up.
Yeah. Probably.
He slurped it up through his goofy ass.
Oh man,
not necessarily.
Flock's mouth.
Sad Porthos.
Mouth.
Sad Porthos. When
sad Porthos is sad.
It's bummy. Sad Porthos. It makes you sad.
Yeah. It makes you feel any better that dog actor is long since dead.
Aww. Okay, he's not sad anymore.
Yeah,
it's not unusual
for the thought of dead dogs to make people just feel much better about their lives.
Yeah, it certainly is.
Dead dog.
So the map. I was looking at this map.
Yeah, man.
So the map, cool map has Nazis owning all of the Northeast U.S.
Yeah.
There's border battles in South Carolina, in North Carolina, in Ohio.
Yeah.
They have the exact border between Kentucky and West Virginia. They have that exact border, it looks
and
like.
Virginia.
But then the Northeast bit of Tennessee, there's a battle. And the tip of Virginia's little west
just,
now
just the tip
a little wiggly bit at the
wiggly
end.
Bit is but they had west for the exact border of West Virginia. So what they had in Virginia, they had one Nazi and two U.S. Signs fighting for Virginia. In South Carolina, they had two Nazis against one U.S.
How many of the native population was on the Nazis?
I don't know. You mean native U.S. was on the Nazi side?
Yeah, like
shit. I didn't even think about that. That's fucked up.
I think the best part
is said that. It's
a good point because when this aired in 2004, it was reasonable not to even consider that. You're like, oh yeah, everyone's going to try to fight the Nazis, or at least lay low.
Right.
That
was back then.
30% of the people are going to be like, fuck yeah.
Oh man.
Didn't you see that video of Hitler? That film of Hitler coming to New York? He's great.
Bummer, dude. There was North Carolina. There looked like North Carolina.
North Carolina.
There looked like there was one U.S. in just going to waltz right in there with no opposition. Because in North Carolina, you see, no one was defending North Carolina. The
Nobody
Nazis
ever
were.
Does. No.
Damn. And there were two Nazis just sitting doing nothing. There was one in southeast North Carolina, actually, which was near guarding the water, I guess. But like that one Nazi could have moved over to the west. And then there was another Nazi.
Then there was
some other Nazi just sitting at the border of Pennsylvania, New York, and New Jersey. Oh, and then there was also
Are you talking about streets in D.C.?
And then there was also one in New Hampshire. There was one in New Hampshire.
New Hampshire?
It was like an awkward game of Axis and Allies.
Yeah. I wonder how many units each thing represented.
Unit. Hey, one thing that I thought was great about this episode
is that Voss can make a plague that targets non-Aryans only somehow.
That was weird. That was scary, but that's not
what
I thought was great.
But how is it possible?
They've been talking
about
that for years.
But it's also the writers maybe maybe the writers are not familiar in 2004. As progressive as they may or may not have been, they may not have been familiar
with the social construction of race. By saying like Target's non-Aryans, doesn't that imply that the Aryans are actually like a real thing?
It does in fact imply that, yeah. And it is wrong.
Okay.
Yeah. There's that great.
Yeah, I think exactly.
It's like saying these imaginary concept people.
Why I was saying this is shady, not just, of course, that Voss can do it, but the fact that the writers sort of wrote that in there is weird.
You know, what are you going to do? Yeah. It was people are assholes.
It was a bad time.
But also, there's.
You said butthole.
There's more.
Who's there, that?
Patrick.
There's more.
Damn
there's,
right.
There's one more than one way to skin a butthole. No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is there's.
Virginia.
There are. Multiple science fiction tales that are variations on the idea of a group deciding to make either a virus or robots. I think there was an Outer Limits where they did it with robots, where they were like, kill all the undesirable people. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that the criteria for undesirable people, they were made up, right?
Yeah.
Because it's just racism. And so the robots or the disease ended up killing everybody.
Ah.
Because obviously you can't parse people out like that, especially not using socially constructed non-biological criteria such as race or ethnicity, etc.
Yeah.
But that's not what I was getting at. What I was getting at...
What do you mean, these people?
What do you mean?
Oh, by the way, another thing that was fucked up was like how those German guards who were like, why are you walking with this woman? Do you like... That was some proper racism. And I like when they don't shy away... From the like those German guards.
Oh yeah,
guards
that scene.
That was like real. And the thing that's extra fucked up is those are Germans, but she could have heard the same thing from those regular.
Exactly.
Maybe.
Yeah. Sal was saying. I think the reason Sal died is because in like plot wise, the reason they allowed him to die is because he was saying some shady shit.
He was also not great necessarily, but
you know, Carmine was probably just as fucked up as Sal, but he never showed it to be true. Maybe Carmine was really good at heart. I don't know. But like he was allowed.
They
made him out to be noble, I guess, but I don't know. In a way.
Noble gangsters.
Hey, remember The Rocketeer when that guy.
I saw that recently. I was sad. It wasn't as good as I remember.
When that gangster was like, I may not like.
Billy Campbell.
He goes, like, I may not make an honest buck, but like, I love America. It was a weird. Weird line to say, like
it's a weird movie. I remember The Rocketeer fondly as a child. I watched it recently. It's worth watching. It's not as good as
but a lot of the gangster dudes in World War II like participated in World War II on the American side.
Yeah,
the American
for the not fucked up side.
Yeah.
Okay, so there was historical reason that The Rocketeer and this both had gangsters fighting.
And particularly, this takes place in Brooklyn. There was a large mafia presence. All your distractions aside, you're very. Very well placed and excellently constructed distractions aside, the very minor point that is now way blown out of proportion that I was trying to make was a fondness I have for this episode is in the scene you're talking about where that Nazi general guy, he's explaining that they've overextended themselves, which is great.
I think it's Crawl. Maybe?
They did not present
no,
this
the general.
As,
that's general. You're talking about the alien guy. You're talking about the general, the actual
German Nazi guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Who gets shot by Vosk later.
The actual German Nazi.
A great German actor. I think his name is like John Neem or something like that. Great. He's really good at playing this horrible Nazi person. But I think it was really helpful to the story. To not portray the Nazis as some sort of superhuman steamrolling over the world. Mm-hmm. I like the idea of them having this brief advantage because of the elimination of Lenin. So it removed an obstacle for the Nazis in the future.
It was Christopher Neem.
Christopher Neem, yeah. So that was cool. I like that they didn't make them into some unstoppable superpower. They're having problems. The Nazis... can't their lines are too long. They've gone too far.
They should have gotten the speedy pass if the lines were too long. Then they get to jump to the front of the line.
Yeah, I think it's called different things at different amusement parks.
I think speedy pass implies what I'm talking about. Though.
I think most
sounds
people,
like an asshole I think, pass.
It is. I think most people will get it. But I did want to just to avoid the letters that we inevitably get.
Letters.
Actually, at King's Dominion, it's this, but at Disney World, it's this.
Nobody knows what King's Dominion is outside of Virginia.
Lots of people know what King's Dominion is.
Maybe in like other parts of the
East Coast.
They
know about like King's Island.
Yeah,
they
other
know
parts
about,
of the East
like,
Coast, Maryland.
Cedar Park, all the
Our
Cedar
international
Park's
audience
things.
Will have no, will not know what
What
King's
does Maryland
Dominion
have?
Is.
They got like Six Flags.
They got that.
King's
they
Dominion
used to have,
better
they
than
used
Six
to have
Flags.
Wild World. Which
well, that's Six Flags.
Well, I know. It became Adventure World, which became Six Six Flags. Yeah. But then Six Flags, no, they bought Wild World. Wild World was its own thing before Six Flags.
Well, yeah.
Anyway, this is not important.
But it's funny. I don't know what you're trying to say.
I'm trying to say you're saying the Wild World is Six Flags. I'm saying it's not Six Flags. Well, it was just bought by Six Flags.
Now.
The corporate.
Yeah, but I'm saying like Wild World was central.
It was different.
Six Flags is a franchise. Wild World was just its own
thing. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
What we can stipulate.
It was cool.
We can stipulate for the purposes of this particular conversation.
Water slides.
I had heat stroke there.
We can stipulate that the history of corporate ownership of various local amusement parks is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But perhaps a topic for another podcast. Mm-hmm. It's got amusement parks.
Absolutely.
That would be a great podcast.
That would be a great one. Yeah.
We can have all sorts of guests on, talk about roly coasters.
Rollies.
Roly coasters.
Roly polies.
How about if we pulled out your tongue?
Loch Ness Monster.
I thought it was good because, first of all, I'm never comfortable when Nazis are portrayed as all powerful because it's not good. That's the point they were trying to make. They were saying they were was all powerful. So when you make them an all powerful enemy, that's a problem. I like showing them in a situation where they've had some victories that cause all this fucked up shit that we're seeing, but at the same time, it's not like there's no hope or whatever. We're hearing throughout both of these episodes these hints of like, you know, there's this rebellion basically. It's like the Star Wars rebellion, except with real human beings. Real human beings.
That general was kind of like getting a little too big for his puffy German pants britches. Like,
well, you mean, well, he did outrank Vosk.
Yeah, but like Vosk, as Vosk said,
I can erase you from history.
So like, and so the German, so the general's all like, you better shape up or ship out. Oh. And
from a practical perspective, I agree.
And in the
end, I'm that general, I'm like, what the fuck have I gotten myself involved with these lizard face people?
So,
would you say, Jesse, the people with all the noses on their face?
They got a bunch of noses on them.
So the general's trying to bargain with Vosk and saying, well, this is how it is. But like, Vosk in the end is fine.
This is how we do it.
And the general is just like pesky by the end. And Vosk was just like, okay, fuck off. And he just kills him. So like the general had no leverage, but he thought he did.
Maybe, but he also was in a bad position because they were being attacked. There was an American offensive that by all accounts was perhaps being fairly successful,
he was
desperate to have that.
It's hard to fight a war in the Appalachian Mountains.
Yeah,
Vosk was doing a bit of bluffing though, because when he said,
"I can erase you from history,"
that was in the point in time where he like was desperate to get this conduit built, and so he needed the general.
But he played
his cards better because then he found another route with the silic and all that stuff.
He was playing all sorts of cards. What are some Star Trek card games? There's the fake one, Fizbin. What are some real ones?
There's probably some internet ones.
There's
Dabo's not a card game.
No.
Is it?
Oh, you're talking about in
Dabo's
universe.
Dabo's more like
Dabo's pool.
No. Damjot is pool.
Oh, Tomjot. What?
Dabo is like roulette.
Yeah. What kind of poker are they playing in TNG?
That's just they're playing like five cards.
They're playing 3D poker.
No, Dan, you're doing that thing again.
Oh,
you're
man.
Just making stuff up.
Aww.
He's crazy. Aww. They do have the 3D chess. Mm-hmm. I know that's the joke.
Gaslight,
son of a bitch.
All right. Other major important points about this particular episode.
I was saying that Malcolm was...
Did we mention the Nazis?
We did.
Okay.
I was saying that Malcolm was really into everything that was going on.
Yeah.
So they were going to go home. This episode begins with the most fucked up situation of all, which is they were going to go home and chill. And then they get into this.
I felt for him there. I was like, that sucks.
Yeah.
He said it was so sad. He's like, I thought we were going
to
go home.
Right. He's the most pissed off. He's like, I was ready to like go to every beach.
In the world. What were you going to do?
We are 200 years in the past.
In the past.
You have enough to worry about without me flying off the handle.
I'll blow your ugly head off.
But then he ends up going to Vol.
Gotcha.
So, but Malcolm was all into it. He was like, oh boy, we get to study like some tactical shit.
There's always, every time you get thrown back in time, there's that one guy.
He's the World War II buff, yeah.
Yeah, Reed is all talking like, T'Pol says, Reed says, there's heavy bombing, most of it in eastern Pennsylvania, southern Virginia. It could be an Allied attack. And T'Pol's like, could it pose a danger to the captain? And then Reed's like, the closest fighting is 100 kilometers south of New York City. Incredible. Like he was, like, and then there was the whole Stuka thing where he was like going off about like, what does Stukas have? I wonder. And you know he loved flying that ship into like to blow up the stuff. Whereas T'Pol was all fucking nervous and shit. She gets so wide eyed when T'Pol's feeling like emotions, you can tell because your eyes get like real fucking big.
She's not in a lot of this episode, but her character's important.
Interestingly,
Jesus Christ.
The finger came out.
Dan's like flinging finger guns at me.
Interestingly, I think it's interesting anyway. I was talking about T'Pol being emotional,
T'Pol.
And we learn, actually,
I'm going to go down to Florida.
I believe it's next.
My sister's dead.
I believe it's the next episode, which is Home, where we learn.
That's
where,
right. Where T'Pol, we covered that episode.
Where T'Pol visits her mommy.
Yeah.
And her mom was like, you are an emotional Vulcan.
They don't have any beaches on
Vulcan. So they established that the next episode. I was noticing, like, T'Pol looked really bummed out about a lot of shit and worried for the captain and Trip. And next episode, they're like, yeah, T'Pol's an emotional Vulcan. We learn, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I forget which episode. That wasn't too long ago we discussed Home. That was fairly recently on this podcast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We discussed Home as it happened. So go scroll back a bit. That was good. That was a fun episode.
I don't think they have any beaches on Vulcan.
They got a lot of sand.
They have fire.
But,
they have fire beaches.
Goes, yeah, fire beaches. Goes,
yeah, there's fire beaches.
And there's like lava waterfalls.
Lavas.
Lava. Maybe there's some lavas.
Maybe they have geysers.
They said the in episode one, there was...
Star Wars episode one?
How many... No.
Oh, no.
No, the of this two-parter. Can you guess how many words with time in it, including the word time itself, there were in this in episode one and two?
Do we have time for this sort of shenanigans?
Okay, in episode one, there's 29. In episode two, there are 25.
Whoa.
And in episode one, they said temporal 7 times. In episode two, they said temporal 12 times.
Right. Damn.
There's a lot of time and temporal going on.
Time, here. Temporal. Yeah.
There's not. Speaking of which, there's not enough time to play the game, and I agree with Patrick, actually. You made a solid point, Patrick.
Which
didn't
game?
Have time.
Do you have a game?
No, the game I was asking you guys to guess how many times they said the thing, and you were like, do we have time to play this game?
Oh, I don't know, 30?
We already gave the answer.
What was the answer?
Jesus Christ, you weren't even fucking listening.
I don't remember a number. I remember you citing some examples, like time and temporal.
Well, when you're doing the editing, you can find out.
Right. I guess I'll hear it again
You
later.
Don't even remember yourself saying, like, we don't have time for this game?
Apparently. No, I remember that.
Oh, because you said it. That's
I remember things I say.
Yeah.
No, I fair don't. Enough. No, I honestly don't. That's a big problem, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Long-time listeners
will know
that.
I have that problem, too, actually.
I think all three of us have that problem, and it makes for a highly entertaining podcast.
What'd you say?
That's why
I forgot.
I keep telling the same stories over and over again.
Well, how about this?
It's fact.
We do have one listener email, and I'd like to read the listener email.
It's classified.
In a second, but the final concluding comment I would like to make about this episode is...
Spaceships.
As ridiculous as some of the plot is, and the temporal Cold War and all that stuff, it is very well performed.
Totally.
And also, even though this is pulling together all those tropes, it's the Nazis, it's the time travel, it's the time
the
travel lady,
the chicken of the egg.
It's pulling together all these tropes. I still found it a fairly unpredictable story. I found it an unpredictable story. In other words... we knew they were going to win in the end, but I wasn't 100% sure which way anything was going to go. So I think more power to this episode. Props to this episode for managing to be entertaining, even though it's a bit cobbled together and it's not entirely sensible.
Well, there's a lot of moving parts going on.
And a lot of characters.
There's a lot of action, especially in the first episode and then the end of the second one. But like, there's a lot of moving parts, a lot of shit going on. Scene changes everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of shit going on.
There's a lot going on. So... interesting fun episode.
Mm-hmm.
All right, how about you want to do a quick listener email?
Yeah, I mean, there was maybe one or two quick comments I was going to make.
All right,
you
make your comments, and then we'll do a quick email.
There's nothing too crazy.
We'll find out.
I guess Grath gets shot and killed just like he dies in Voyager, Tuvix. that's one thing to point out.
But it's pretty early on.
That's apparently interesting.
That's pretty interesting.
That character dies pretty early on.
Yeah, another thing they didn't explore is when Krall was all questioning Archer, when he was questioning Vosk and being like, he's like, we can't afford to be pulling this shit at one point, and Vosk is like, yeah, we can do it. You'd think later on that would play into something later, but it doesn't really do much. They don't really go anywhere. But anyways, that's fine. I guess they were just letting us know that shit was dire. But Archer... Where's our? Is he? I can't remember. Is he? He's from upstate New York.
Yes,
really?
He is from upstate.
Okay, because they mentioned that, and so I couldn't remember.
I think he's from Syracuse or something. You know, the water polo capital of the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've been there.
Oh.
Car 54. Where are?
Can you name this?
Gunther Tootie.
Can you name the sound effect? Which scene it is? You probably can.
Is that another one of your beat sounds?
No.
Is that the P? That's the P-41, 51s?
No, actually.
Is that when they're in the shuttlecraft getting shot at?
Now that I listened to it back, I was like, oh, it's not so clear. That does kind of say. No, it was the awesome shot of Vosk blasting, like, Archer and Alicia, trying to blast them away as they're transporting away. I thought that was an amazing
shot.
That was
a good shot.
He just grabs his alien Nazi, like, grabs, like, this
he's
machine.
Just like,
that was pretty awesome.
That was pretty good.
Speaking of which, Vosk is kind of, like... their whole deal is that they're kind of Nazi-like, too. Like, this whole Vosk situation.
Yeah, I mean, he sort of states that outright. He's like, we're both into this whole purity thing.
Yeah, right.
Just so, in different ways.
He's talking about societies, cultures can be improved through careful manipulation of historical events. They tried to fucking prevent a whole species from gaining sentience.
Which is fucked up, but also makes sense. And it's also one of the things that makes the whole temporal Cold War thing complicated and ridiculous.
Yeah, and I guess that's less of a Nazi thing and more just a fucked up evil thing.
It's more just fucked up. Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's hard to go up above and beyond the Nazis in terms of horribleness, but yeah.
I'm not saying it's more evil. I'm just saying it's like less than a Nazi. It's because it's not pushing it's not pushing someone out because of how they are. It's preventing them from becoming a certain way. So he was kind of an asshole. That whole speech he gave at the end about his greatest scientists, every moment we live, talking about how we've earned time travel and we can we're allowed to manipulate people. So that was the whole thing.
There's a lot of whole things in this episode.
There's a lot of whole things.
And some of them were good, some of them were not so good.
Yeah.
That's our conclusion. Now, listener emails.
When T3 Trip Tucker the Third, why am I gotta abbreviate it and then explain it? Tucker the Third and Mayweather, they get all captured and when they're surrounded by the Germans, and Mayweather's gonna grab it. He looks at T3, he's like, what am I gonna do? And then And T3, he just looks back and he just shakes his head.
Yeah.
He just shakes his head. And I was like, yeah, no, don't even bother, man.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Nazis.
I like that. I don't know. I like how he shook his head. I basically like anything that Trip Tucker the Third does.
I'm a big fan of Charles
Trip Tucker the Third.
Yeah.
I'm also a fan of reading this listener email.
We
haven't gotten to read for
one more thing.
God damn this Columbo bullshit.
That scene when Carmine when he threw that grenade. First of all, when he threw that grenade and exploded the thing. I don't think grenades actually do that. They just shoot out shrapnel. They don't explode things. But also, when they were shooting their handgun in that scene, they were recoiling and there was the noise, but there was no visual that a gun was actually being shot. If you look at that scene.
Right. There's no muzzle flash.
Yeah, there's no muzzle flash. That's the word I was looking for.
Because it was fairly dark. You would have seen something.
Anyways, okay.
And in a lot of shows,
actually, it was in the daytime. They show that shit. It was in the daytime during that scene. But
it's still
you're telling me that this is inaccurate? It's not true to life.
I'm just saying, they made. There's certainly
something on television.
No, that you can't know because
this guy used to skulk around behind the alleys with his guns.
Shows usually include a muzzle flash. That's all I'm saying.
They usually
couldn't afford it.
Maybe. Okay. Now we can go to listener.
Okay. Now we'll make it quick because we go over time.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's do it.
All right. Because the whole point of this is that we got a few episodes back. This is episode 204, but a few episodes back was our 200th episode Specialtacular, which you should go check out if you have not already. It's a great episode of It's Got Star Trek. We had callers calling and leaving messages. We had emails. We had all sorts of fun gags. It was a good time. But we got so many emails that we couldn't read all of them in that episode because it was already a super long episode. So we're trying to sprinkle them out in some of these other episodes, but we keep getting busy and talking too long. And we did that again tonight, but at least we'll get one email out real quick and we'll keep the answers short.
No, we're about a time we usually are.
Hello, all. Congratulations on achieving 200 podcast episodes. Now it's 204. Plus bonus episodes.
Yeah, inaccurate.
This was the only person to actually mention our bonus episodes because he said, congratulations on achieving 200 podcast episodes plus bonus episodes. I haven't listened to everyone, so forgive me if you've talked about this before, but as someone who would love to do something like a podcast or YouTube videos, one thing that has held me back is the fear of dealing with criticism, both from trolls and from friends, family, colleagues, etc. Do you have to deal with that sort of thing? And if so, how do you handle it? I thought that's a good question about sort of being creative and some of the drawbacks to, you know, being sensitive to
as family goes, I don't think my family listens. And if they do, they don't mention it to me. So I don't even
if they don't
about
mention
that.
It to you, do you think it's because they think it's so funny?
No, it's
or
because
they think it's so terrible.
It's probably because they think it's so terrible.
my in-law parents listen.
Your in-law parents?
My wife's parents listen and they like it. It's cool.
Sometimes Jesse talks like an alien. My in-law parents.
My in-law parents.
In-law parents.
That was an extraterrestrial.
My human in-laws.
I'll say, you know, keeping it brief, because I think it's a good question. First of all, I always encourage people, be creative, go out, do stuff. It's like, what was it on Adventure Time? The dog says, the first step to getting good at something is sucking at it. So first of all, there's that. You have to just do stuff.
You're talking about when Bender, the Bender voice?
The Bender
that?
Voice dog.
What's that guy's
Jake,
name?
Jake the dog.
No, but I can't remember the name of the actor.
John DiMaggio.
That's right. Yeah. Joe DiMaggio. No, not John.
John DiMaggio. Joe DiMaggio is a different guy entirely. But my point being,
come along with me.
I'm in favor.
And the butterflies and bees. I love that song at the end of Adventure.
It's good. But it's be creative. Put yourself out there. But obviously, there's different comfort levels people have. And if you are going to be sensitive to critiques, that's something to consider and try to gird against. But honestly,
gird? I knew someone with gird once.
Oh my God. My advice is you should use the golf mentality. You should be playing against yourself and not against other people. Don't worry about other people. Do what you think is fun for you, what works for you. And where it's not working, figure out how to improve it. And that's what you should do. And that's how you get better at something. And that's how you'll make something that's worthwhile.
Watch out for those sand
and
traps.
Fun to do. It's not that you can't seek out or take constructive criticism or whatever. But first of all, with regard to trolls, trolls are hilarious. They just wanted fucking attention. And they say a bunch of nonsense. I could not care less about what.
I think we generally laugh those guys.
Yeah,
off.
we don't mention it much. We get all sorts of troll behavior. We just laugh and think it's funny because you can guess at what some of these people's lives are like if they're sitting there and trying to get some amusement out of saying some nonsense.
I'm not doing something, so I'm going to make sure you're not going to do something either.
It's honestly kind of hilarious and sad. I mean, you have a certain sympathy for these people because you're like, okay, whatever. So we don't need to pay them much attention. But of course, obviously, we're always looking to improve ourselves in a wide variety of activities that we all participate in. And I think that's the other key. Yeah, we three do this podcast. Jesse's bored of it at this moment, as you can tell. But we three do this podcast because we enjoy doing it. It's fun. And we also do a bunch of other stuff independently and together that's very different from this podcast. So I think that's another thing is, you know, you have lots of different outlets and they'll help each other. You know, they'll cross-pollinate skills and all that other stuff.
I'll try to keep it brief because we are running a little on time here.
Who cares?
I just know from personal experience performing, like from piano recitals to like
those are the worst
to band shows like
rock and roll
shows and stuff like that. With the rock shows, like I remember playing, and there's times we've had a bad set, and you know, like we didn't get any reaction from anybody, and luckily no boos. People are
just
actually usually people are pretty like. Cool about like not booing, but the point is like afterwards I feel bummed out, but I'm more bummed out. I'm not embarrassed. There's a little bit of embarrassment, but it's more just like, oh man, what can we do to make this better? And I don't ever feel like I'm questioning what I'm doing.
It's not we shouldn't do this. It's what should we do to improve this? What do we need to do to get to where we want it to be?
Right. And so, but I've always known that because it's something I love to do, that's how I know I'm going to keep doing it. So other people's opinions, yes, it matters. I'm not going to say I don't care about other people's opinion, but it doesn't prevent me from wanting to keep doing it, you know? So.
And I think the key there is, if you're curious or not what type of person you are, give it a try. And if you're finding you're not comfortable with it, that just might not be the thing for you, but that doesn't mean you can't find other ways to be creative that may not be exactly what you thought you'd be into, but nevertheless are super awesome because there's so much stuff that you can do out there and to contribute. And anybody being creative in my book is useful, unless you're a piece of shit, I guess. I don't know. I guess you could be a creative piece of shit. Maybe you
I'm
guys,
gonna kill this guy.
If you guys are pieces
I'm a creative
of shit,
piece of shit.
Don't be creative. Just sort of stay at home and don't bother people. But the rest of you,
come on out.
Come on out and have some fun. All right. I think that does it for us this week.
Easy Eddie's Eggplant Extravaganza.
The really cool thing is that next week, we already know what we're going to be talking about because there
awful
are...
Awful Aubrey's Aubergine.
There are...
Okay. That was to, you know, he said something about Eddie's eggplant.
Yeah, and he went up to me totally.
He did. He just fucking... Jesse just stomped you. Stomped you on your fucking head. Okay, next week.
Let's do it.
Next week, we are blessed to have two episodes of Lower Decks airing on the next Thursday, right? So next episode, we will be discussing those two episodes of Lower Decks. The first episode is called...
Oh, we're going to do two?
They're doing the thing where they do two again.
They are, but you know what? I'm not stressing about it.
Paramount Plus.
I'm not going to argue that we should do two separate episodes.
No.
Old Patrick might have argued that because of OCD and other things, but in this case...
These are shorter episodes.
They're shorter episodes. They're airing them together, and that's how it's
cartoon.
It's how it's being presented. So that's how we'll do it.
But these episodes are always jam-packed with, like, information.
Episode one of season four of Lower Decks is called Two Vix, but, like, T-W-O.
Oh, no.
Vix, Two Vix, like, sequel, like Fast and the Furious. And the episode 402 is called I Have No Bones, Yet I Must Flee, which is a great parody of a Star Trek title. So looking forward to talking about both of those episodes next week, as well as continuous weekly coverage of Lower Decks from that point onward until the conclusion of the fourth season. And then who knows what happens after that because of all the writer strikes and all the other business. So we'll probably be going back to Dan's algorithm doing some fun.
Maybe they'll have a Star Trek reality show. Maybe that. I hope they don't.
Maybe we should make one.
I both want that and would be so sad if they didn't.
I know. I know what
you're
saying.
In the meantime, you can follow us on social media, in the whole social media sphere, at It's Got Star Trek, pretty much everywhere. You know, Facebook, follow us on YouTube, subscribe and all that. Feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. And of course, the website is www.itsgotstartrek.com. Check us out in all those places. Become super fans. Become obsessive. Send us all sorts of crazy letters. Make us slightly uncomfortable with how much you like us. That's the ideal. Yeah. Honestly, that's kind of the ideal situation for our egos to be in. That's
for real. Sort of
slight discomfort in how awesome you think we are. So that might also feed into an answer. That might be partially answer the previous letter. Okay, with that, that'll be enough for this week, and we'll talk to you again next week. Goodbye.
It's good to see you, Commander. You're alive? As long as you don't pull that trigger. I can't believe it. The building's about to blow up. Gotcha.